This is Ian Pickus for WAMC News. The city of Cohoes in Albany County is going to have three mayors in under 5 months. On Tuesday, first-term Democrat Sean Morse pleaded guilty to felony wire fraud. That night, the Common Council swore in Council President Christopher Briggs as acting mayor, and June's Democratic primary winner Bill Keeler is all but certain to take office in January in the heavily Democratic city. Joining us to talk about the situation in his home city and some state issues is New York State Assemblyman John McDonald, a Democrat from the 108th District who served as mayor of Cohoes for 13 years. Assemblyman, what's been your reaction to the latest in the city?
Well, it's an unfortunate chapter that the city's gone through. And, the guilty plea the other day that Sean admitted in federal court set off this recent change of events. And, let's be clear. Sean has done some great work during his tenure as mayor, just like most mayors do. They always have certain things to point to. But unfortunately, his personal transgressions caught up to him. And so we're now on to another chapter. Chris Briggs, who I've known for 25, 30 years, a very capable individual, by design of the charter, moves into the role of acting mayor. He'll do a great job throughout the course of the year. I don't think he'll just be a placeholder. I think he'll be a very active mayor. And at the same token, he's got a very good working relationship with the soon-to-be mayor on January 1st, Bill Keeler, who I've known since grade school. They both have the same temperament. They are very thoughtful individuals. And I think this, in a way, sets up to be a beautiful transition for Bill Keeler, which will help the city of Cohoes continue to move forward.
You had that job for a long time. What makes someone be a good mayor of Cohoes? What does the job entail, and what do they have to do?
Well, this is not to demean the role, because I still consider that job as probably the most important job I've ever had in my lifetime. But the reality is this: yes, the mayor is the leader of the city. The mayor does set direction. But what is often lost in the process is that the mayor can't do it by themselves. The mayor needs a good team around, he or she, to get the job done. And that's really what makes the city tick. Not only the people working, the public servants, but also the community at large and their participation. And I think that those are, I know the way Bill is and I know the way Chris is, they will continue to carry on that spirit. But it's really about having the right people in the right spot and also to listen, to take in ideas, to build relationships. During my 13 years as mayor, I made it a point not only to work with our constituents and also the department heads, but mostly to work with our neighboring mayors and supervisors and our state and federal officials as well. It's about relationships and about being in that channel to identify what's going on and to see if it's applicable to your community. And I think, I look back at, everyone looks back at their accomplishments. I look back at during my time as mayor, I saw that GlobalFoundries was going to be a reality. We saw that SUNY Nanotech was continuing to grow. We saw that RPI was continuing to grow. And we really re-engineered our city from being an old industrial city to being a up-and-coming residential community. And it's been evidenced by not only the first population increase at the last census in 2010, but we continue to see growth in our community. And it's a positive on every different avenue. And you're seeing that spill down into the downtown business district. As more and more people live here, more and more people require services, whether it's something as simple as eating or stopping at the pharmacy. And we're seeing that growth in the downtown. And it's a good thing.
We should just note that we're talking to you at your pharmacy.
Yeah,
right now,
yeah, so. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Yep, absolutely. No secret here. Everyone knows I have outside income and another responsibility.
Okay, well, since you've taken us there, are you planning to maybe leave state government with this upcoming ban on outside income moving in?
I have no plans on leaving office. I mean, the only day I'll leave office is if the public decides I should leave office. And that's the way it should be. The ban has, from court order perspective, pretty much been diminished. Basically, next year was scheduled to be the second increase in the pay that will not go up because the outside income ban was declared by the judge as being illegal and not part of what was originally agreed to. There was an agreement 2 years ago to have a compensation committee put together to identify if and should the compensation be increased. And that was decided, but they also decided to throw in that in year two, there would also be an increase in the salary with the outside income ban. And that was not part of the agreement. The outside income ban is something that should be thoroughly discussed. It should be publicly vetted. But anybody who believes that the outside income has been the cause for the last 30 individuals over the last 20 years to leave office under disgrace has been totally incorrectly informed. Arguably, two individuals, one being Sheldon Silver, abused the privilege of outside income. And that's it. The rest was good old-fashioned graft.
But what about the argument that if you don't have an outside income at all, there can't be any question there, that even the potential for some sort of dual dealing exists, even though by and large, probably many of the lawmakers aren't involved in any such thing. But just the question could be there in voters' minds because they don't know.
Yeah. Well, you know, this is why there's a couple different aspects to this, and you have to look at this in a balanced conversation. Now more than ever before, because of Sheldon Silver and because of Dan Scalise, the disclosure requirements on state legislators is at the highest level possible. My disclosure statement, which is posted on my state website and on my campaign website, which is not required, but I do that because it's actually legislation I carry, is there to fully inform the voters of who I am and what I do, whether it's in the legislature or outside the legislature. And that leads to the other aspect. I am one of the few, if only, practicing healthcare professionals out of 213 members. Now, that doesn't give me a gold star by any stretch of the imagination, but it does give an example of an individual who brings real-time experience on what's going on in the healthcare system. And when you look at the fact that we spend over $50 billion a year on health and Medicaid, it's not a bad idea to have somebody who can stand there and validate, yes, this is what's happening in the field, and no, that's not what's happening in the field. So it gets back to, do you want to have a single body of individuals who are solely dependent on being reelected to make a living, or do you want individuals who bring experience and are able to stand up, take votes when they're not going to be popular? You know, I think the general public has no idea what actually goes on at the legislature. I've been there now 7 years. I've been around there for 20 years through my years as mayor of the city of Cohoes. There are a lot of special interests that spend a lot of time doing their job and getting people to sing their song sheet. But at the end of the day, and you got to be careful because some people get insulated and they just focus on what the special interests want versus what the public wants. I like to think as a citizen legislator, I bring a balanced approach. There are many others that do that. And it's not for any other reason that that is how our constitutional framers developed government. If it was to be changed, then we should go through a very public discussion. Let the people make a decision on that. And quite honestly, I argue that being one now who's been elected to public office not once but 8 times, the public has made their decision in regards to John McDonald.
Let me just play devil's advocate on that issue before we get to something else. So let's say you're taking a vote that pertains to pharmaceuticals or something like that. There could be a question that you're voting as someone who owns a pharmacy.
That's a valid question. And quite honestly, if that comes up that it has a direct impact on me, I would actually do a rare thing that you see up there. It's that NV, that orange one, no vote. I would abstain.
Has that happened?
It has not happened by any stretch of the imagination. But I will tell you this, what has happened, when I came to legislature and I sat through my first ethics training, it became very suddenly apparent to me that I had a potential conflict of interest through no fault of my own. I had inherited through a pharmacy closing about $500,000 a year in prescription drug business to service the state agency's Department of Disabled Persons group homes. And because of the fact that that agency, which is a whole other discussion, at that time was not doing RFPs for services, and because I did more than $25 a year in business, as soon as I sat in training, I went to the training officer after, I went to our counselor, said, I have a conflict of interest. I need to make sure that these patients, I drop this business, but I do that in a way. I went there, got the legal opinion from counsel. I went to the SED to make sure I wasn't violating my oath as a pharmacist. The bottom line is that people do the right thing. The problem is we only hear about when people do the wrong thing, not the right thing. And you know, I, along with many others, are very conscientious about the fact that we're public officers. We're elected to represent the people, not ourselves, and we need to be very mindful. But at the same token, I don't think you can debate the fact that here we are in the height of the opioid crisis, and it's not a bad idea to have somebody at the table discussing what's going on in the field so we know what the right direction is to go.
I want to ask you about the license plates. Now, so Governor Cuomo announced a contest to pick a new design. And in that announcement, several paragraphs down, came word that if your license plates are more than 10 years old, you will have to buy new ones. And if you want to keep the same number, there's an additional charge. Is this a good idea?
So I got to tell you, this has been like the curveball of the week. Usually there's one. This is the curveball of the week. This came out of nowhere. It's not something the legislature approved. It's something the Department of Motor Vehicles has pushed forward. Yes, the governor did the announcement. I think the contest is kind of fun, actually, because personally, as an upstater, I like the one that has shows Niagara Falls and the New York City skyline. It shows one New York. That's just my push for my favorite plate. That being said, there is a lot of confusion out there about what is actually being accomplished. The argument I've heard is that the old blue and white plates, which some of them, as you know, if you remember back 15 years ago when they were produced, they started to peel, are not readable on the plate scanners. We do want to move to a totally cashless toll system. That's going to actually prevent future toll increases or the amount of future toll increases. It's also going to make the motorist trip that much more quicker. So I think no one could disagree with that. The issue is, if I like my plate, why am I paying an extra fee? And that's the item that we're having great trouble with. And John Q. Public is having great trouble with it because we know that the state's finances are always a challenge. You know, from the outsider's perspective or the listener's perspective, this looks like a money grab. We're trying to really identify factually what was the history before, why is this change being done, and you know, myself, and I know my colleagues in the Capital Region, and I know many other legislators on both sides of the aisle are questioning the agency on exactly what are they doing. And I understand why they're doing it. I don't dispute why they're doing it. And quite honestly, I don't think it's logical for the state to have three different plates. I just don't think it makes sense. You know, you have the white and blue, you have the gold and blue, which, you know, I get new plates every 2 years because our numbers change. And by the way, people don't know this, the legislators pay for those every single time. And I'm not complaining, just making a point of fact. Technically, as the rest of society moves towards a cashless system, a scanning system, it makes sense to make sure we have state-of-the-art plates. I'm still wondering out loud, well, if there's white and blue plates and you're saying we're not catching them, then how come people are saying they're getting caught in other states? Or are you telling me that we left a lot of money on the table over all these years? And if we're leaving money on the table, then why are we putting an additional fee on it? So it's a fact-finding. It's definitely an exercise in frustration. And it seems like it's more than the curveball of the week.
New York State Assemblyman John McDonald of the 108th District. He's a Democrat. Thank you so much for your time talking about some city and state issues.
Thanks, Ian. Have a great day.